Good evening, afternoon, morning, whenever you're watching, everybody. I'm Mongo. This is Kilroy. We got our buddy Kevin with us. Welcome to I-80 Sports. And we are continuing our run through the NBA today. We're going division by division. Hopefully you saw our last episode when we went after the Pacific. And today we are going to be taking an in-depth look at the Southwest Division. Before we do that, though, we got to start out with a little bit of a sad note. We lost one of our favorite comedians, one of our favorite actors. Norm Macdonald passed away earlier this week. Aside from being hysterical, he does have a sports tie. Aside from his hilarious jokes and no-quit effort about O.J. Simpson, he also hosted the 1998 ESPYs, where he gave one of the best half-monologue, half-roasts you'll ever hear. So we just like to take a minute and begin with a moment of silence to honor one of our favorites, Norm Macdonald.
Hello again. So, Kevin, why don't you start us off with some quick hits about the Southwest?
Okay, so an interesting report came about late yesterday morning, or maybe it was early yesterday afternoon, that John Wall and the Houston Rockets have agreed in that John Wall is going to sit, not play for the Rockets, while the Rockets do some attempts to trade him away from their team. It is not known as of this time where they're going to trade John Wall to, but they have agreed in principle to sit him while they search for a trade that works out for both John Wall and the Houston Rockets.
Hmm. I think that's a good move on both parts. You know, Houston's clearly in a rebuild. John Wall at this point is trying to revive his career after major injury, and it just makes sense. This is something I thought about that was a possibility of happening. I also thought about it as a possible buyout situation.
Yeah, absolutely. This is basically when the Jets, how the Jets handled Le'Veon Bell a couple years ago, where they made sure he could get to a contender instead of just trading him for a seventh rounder to some garbage team. And what they were purposely doing was sending the message to the rest of the league, hey, we know how to handle our veterans and treat our veterans around you. And that's effectively what the Rockets are doing. They accept the fact that the John Wall era is a lost cause. Let's at least earn a little clout with other veterans out there, so maybe they'll want to join us in the future.
So let's get right into this. So I believe we've decided this time we're going to go from 1 to 5. Because we all have the same, or we're pretty sure we all have the same number one. We're not quite, me and Mongo know what we have. We don't know who Kevin has, but we're pretty sure we all have the same number one team. So Kevin, why don't you start us off? Who's your number one team?
My number one team in this division will be the Dallas Mavericks.
Yay, we all have
good
the same.
Good answer.
Now, it should be noted, the Dallas Mavericks last year finished at 42-30. Which would have been good enough for 48 wins. For a little bit of reasons, I don't see them improving on their on that projected win total. I see them taking a step back from 48 wins. I see them actually only winning 42 wins this year, 42 games this year. But, and this is an important but, I don't see anyone else in this division surpassing 42 wins, and therefore I have them winning this division with all of 42 wins.
I have them winning 50. Luka's really good. Kristaps Porzingis is still very good, even though he barely plays the game, and then, the rest of the New York Knicks that they have on their roster is pretty good.
The theme of the Southwest is, last week we talked the Pacific and we said it turned into a total arms race. The Southwest is an arms race of guys you pick up halfway through your fantasy basketball league for a one-day stream. It's amazing how many, oh yeah, that guy joined the Southwest this year. And Dallas was kind enough to give us two very entertaining ones in our New York friends, Reggie Bullock and Trey Burke. Kevin, I'm with you. It's a net neutral at best.
They added a third name.
They added Frank Ntilikina earlier today. So they added the whole gang's all there. But I'm with you, Kev. I have it pretty much as a net neutral. I put them right back at 49 wins, only because there are a couple really weak teams out there that I think they'll be able to beat up on. But I think the bigger issue for them is that they're not looking in the rearview mirror, nor should they, to your point, Kevin. The rest of this division is pretty rough, and I would say they might be the division favorite who would be the biggest catastrophe if they didn't win their division. You know, I think if the Lakers don't win, well, that was a darn good Suns team.
Right.
You know, the Nets win, well, Simmons stayed with the Sixers and they got hot. You know, most teams can make an excuse. Dallas is one of the few teams out there that really has no excuses. And I think that's the bigger issue for them this year, more than skill. They'll be fine. It's the exact same team. Plus they added a couple guards off the bench, but this team has implosion potential because if they get in their own heads, why aren't we running away with this thing? We know there are a couple divas on this team. This could get real ugly real quick.
Yeah, I mean, as we get more and more into our lists, you know, you'll start to see why. Normally, the Spurs are the top dog in this division, and it's usually between them and the Mavericks, as we will talk about more as we go on. But the Spurs really just lack talent now. All their big names are gone. They were not able to, like, even the new big names that they got in DeMar DeRozan and LaMarcus Aldridge are on different teams. They literally have no one. They were unable to trade for Lauri Markkanen. They got nothing. But again, we'll talk about that as we continue on to the polls. So who do you have, Kevin? Actually, you know what, Mongo, who do you have for number two?
All right. So this is the one I am most excited for in terms of teams I think can surprise us here. I have the Memphis Grizzlies coming in at number two. Now, that might not surprise a lot of people, but I actually have them outlasting a little bit longer this year and making it to 45 wins. I want to hear from you guys, and then I'm going to explain exactly what the Grizzlies did that I don't think anybody realizes, but let me hear from you guys first.
I have the Grizzlies as well, and I have them at 42 wins.
One second. All right. So the Grizzlies, just so you guys know,
who's your number two?
The Grizzlies are also my Grizzlies are also my number two team. So let's make that clear. They were 38-34 last year. That's a projected win total of 43 wins. I have them at 41 wins. I don't think they're gonna quite match. I think they're gonna be a little bit off from last year, but not so far off. Like, it's not like a big drop off from last year. I think they're gonna have a little itsy bitsy drop off that'll get, and I believe that'll get them to 41 wins. And I have them losing kind of like a last second, kind of like a last game scenario to Dallas, which is why I have them at number two.
I would be remiss if I didn't bring this up. And if you're watching along at home and you've ever wanted to grab a piece of paper and get professed to while watching us, this would be the moment to go grab some paper. The Grizzlies made a trade right before the draft. Kevin, stay with me.
Sure.
Valanciunas went to the Pelicans for Steven Adams and Eric Bledsoe. And a swap in the draft, they moved up about seven picks. They then took Eric Bledsoe and sent him to the Clippers for Rondo, who they waived, Daniel Oturo, who is now on their bench, and Patrick Beverley. They then took Patrick Beverley and flipped him to Minnesota, where they got Jarrett Culver and Hernan Gomez. They then took Hernan Gomez just earlier today and flipped him to Boston, and they got Chris Dunn and Carson Edwards. So if you're doing the math here, that means Jonas Valanciunas left the team in exchange for Daniel Oturo, Jarrett Culver, Carson Edwards, Chris Dunn, Steven Adams, and the right to move up seven picks in the draft. Bravo, Memphis. Bravo. Whatever happens this year, yeah, at least won the offs. Very nicely done.
Yeah, I like how the team has been built. They are trending in the right direction. That's why they're my number two. I have them at 42 wins because I don't think they're quite necessarily ready to go beyond that. But, you know, they do have a winning record. Let's be honest. It's going to be between 42 and 45 wins, like you were saying.
Right.
I really, you know, even 41 is reasonable. They're good enough to make the playoffs, but they're not necessarily, showstoppers.
Right. That trade circus aside, I still have them finishing seventh in the West. I still think they have a ceiling, but they check all the boxes. They're young. They're fun to watch. Everyone seems to have a role. They have a ton of depth, especially after Trade-a-Palooza I just mentioned. If you're a Grizzlies fan, you're going into this thinking, I have no reason not to enjoy what I'm about to see. And for a small market like them, that's really all you can ask.
And they have pieces that they can also package together and move to get, you know, players.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this,
now this gets fun.
This is when we're going to start seeing some differences here. My number three team is the Pelicans. I have them going 41-41 just because Zion is amazing. And, you know, so is what's that guy's name? Who's the other
forward? I'm hoping you mean Brandon Ingram.
Yeah, Brandon Ingram. Okay, there you go. Thank goodness. Brandon Ingram is very good, and they're good. They work well. They play well together, and they've been playing together. This is their third year together this upcoming season. They've played well the past 2 years together. This is the second season with Kira Lewis. So he'll presumably get better as well, and they're definitely poised to stay around 500, which is where they typically are. I don't really see them, you know, taking a leap this year to beyond that, maybe like 42 to 43 wins, but you know, I don't see them, you know, all of a sudden winning 50 games unless there's some like major jumps in some of these younger
players. You're pretty spot on. And I'll tell you, this team, so Kevin's going to break down the numbers for us here in just a minute, but I'll tell you, the over-under on this one is particularly interesting. DraftKings, a lot of the areas in Vegas have them at about 38.5, which, Kilroy, you're absolutely right. That's about where this team always seems to fall. But this team is so hard to bet on this year because it simply comes down to, do you believe in their two young shooting guards? Do you believe in Nikhil Alexander-Walker and Kira Lewis? I'm not a huge fan, so I put them right around there. I have them at 39 wins. If you're really sour on those guys, I could see you going as low as 32, 33. If you believe in those guys, add in that they traded for Valanciunas, add in that they signed Devontae Graham. You know, those two young guys, Graham, Ingram, Zion, Valanciunas, that's a viable five if you happen to like those guys. I'm just not as high on others are. So I could see you believing in them pretty high. I could see you believing in them pretty low. But I tend to put them right about in the middle of that range, about where you are. I have them at 39 wins.
And that's your number three team as well?
That's my number three team.
The New Orleans Pelicans are also my number three team. They were 31-41 last year, which would have equated to about 35 wins. I see them improving a little bit with the moves they made, and I think that they will end up with 39 wins.
Kevin, I'm not sure if you're ashamed of that pick, which is why your screen just went black, but you just did something that turned off your camera.
Sorry about that. I accidentally hit something on my monitor. Sorry about that.
Was it your screen by any chance? Was it the power? No, but yeah, I think we're all about the same. They're not a team you really feel ready to believe in. You know, there are certain teams out there that are genuinely not as good, but you just feel like they have a more definitive direction. You know, whereas the Pelicans, you know, especially guys like Devontae Graham, I don't know. I'm great, you know, fills the stat sheet. I'm sure he's a great guy, but just guys like that seem to really, you can't add around because he's going to step on someone's toes. And, you know, add in the two young guards who both kind of are we ones? Are we twos? Where do we fit in? You know, I think Valanciunas was a slam dunk trade. You know, his ability to get outside and give Zion his space is pretty genius. But in such a guard heavy league, you just have so many questions on how all three of those guards fit together that I'm not ready to commit, you know, above 500 yet.
I mean, they're if they can like piece a couple players together, they could probably go out and get one of the, you know, the Orlando guards.
That's true. The Magic are just selling at all times. We can only assume. Otherwise, we have no idea what they're actually.
Anything else you want to bring up about the Pelicans, Kevin, before we switch over to our number four?
I'm on board with many of the same points Mongo had. I do like Jonas Valanciunas. I thought that was the bulk of my the four wins that I thought they would improve. I thought he would be responsible for two, maybe three of them. And then I just thought that for that fourth win improvement, I thought somewhere along the line that they were going to win one additional game just based on growing together as a team. And that's how I arrived at 39 wins.
Before we move on, I-80 sports fans, I would be remiss if I didn't throw someone under the bus real quick here. We have been moving pretty quickly here, and I have a funny feeling this is going to slow to a halt here shortly. We do have a San Antonio Spurs fan among us. I'll give you a hint. It's not the guy talking right now, and it's not the guy in the toad hat. So we're going to pass this off to Kilroy to get this started. And I have a funny feeling he has a lot to say. Kilroy?
So I do have a lot to say. They're actually my number five team.
Whoa!
Wow!
Hey,
I have Houston doing better. I feel like added good players, and with the potential trade of John Wall that we happening allows them to really stabilize and get other players along with that roster so that they help them grow. I feel the Spurs have pretty much no one. They lost Patty Mills. They lost DeMar DeRozan. They traded away LaMarcus Aldridge. I mean, I could probably pull up the roster and look and be like, oh, yeah, there's a couple of decent players. But no one on that team screams to me, oh, boy, I'm so glad that the San Antonio Spurs have this player. I just don't see them improving at all. I expect them to be, around a 25-30 win team. As good of a coach as Popovich is, he still needs talent on his team. This is something I was hinting at during one of our other episodes about the summer Olympics, about how maybe Popovich isn't as good of a coach as we thought he was, and maybe a lot of it had to do with the fact that he had Tim Duncan, one of the greatest power forwards of all time, on his team, and Tony Parker, who was, a top 10 point guard when he was in the league, and Manu Ginobili, who was arguably the best sixth man of his generation, and then just had really good players who played well together. You had early, you had David Robinson, you had Robert Horry, you had Matt Bonner, you had Tiago Splitter, was a very good center, not like talent wise, but he fit very well with Tim Duncan. That it allowed them to do these types of things. Don't forget
Nazi Muhammad when they won Nazi that Muhammad. Title in 2003. Oh no, 2005. I'm sorry.
Their ability to use these lesser talented players, but to pair, because they were able to pair them with someone like Tim Duncan, who, as you were you said to me earlier today, was one of the quietest players, but you'd be watching the whole game, and then all of a sudden you'd look at the stats and he's put it up 25 and 17 or whatever the number you said, but that's just the type of player he was. He was and I think that Popovich is missing that type of player. He doesn't have that. He kind of had that a little bit with LaMarcus Aldridge, not to the exact same extent, in a similar vein. And now he doesn't have that either, because he, and I just don't see that happening this year. Maybe they end up, maybe at this point they're trying not to do well, right? And they're looking to get higher draft picks. Tim Duncan was a higher draft pick, so maybe that's what he's hoping for.
Now, it should be noted that when they got Tim Duncan, the reason they got Tim Duncan as the overall pick when they picked him was because David Robinson the previous year got a significant knee injury and they only won 20 games the previous season. So they ended up with the number one pick that previous season, and that's how they got Tim Duncan.
I'll tell you, to your point, Kilroy, I'm going to give you a list here. The list here is Doug McDermott, Thad Young, Al-Farouq Aminu, Trey Jones. And I want you to tell me, were those the last four guys in every fantasy draft I did in 2018? Or are those the free agents the Spurs acquired one way or another this offseason?
Is that really who they acquired?
I'll give you a hint. It's both. Yeah, that's your Spurs. I would love to say that's your Spurs bench. But chances are either Thad or McDermott are a starting forward on this. It is.
I like McDermott off the bench.
And
Thad Young. If we're talking about young Thad Young, he's a good player.
Yeah, but if this was 2012, I'd love this team. Even their stars, Derek White, Lonnie Walker. I mean, stars. But these all scream of guys who you accidentally draft when you take too long in a fantasy league. These all reek of auto draft. I'm 100% with you that this team looks muchos defunct on paper. But to your point about Popovich, the only reason I give this team a drop of faith is because why is Popovich here if this is a rebuild? Why would he go through this? Why would he tarnish his record? If this is a true, honest-to-God rebuild with how little they have, he's not going to be the coach by the time they're good again.
All right, this is who Yahoo has as the starting five for the San Antonio Spurs. You have a point guard, DeJounte
Murray.
You have shooting guard, Derek White. Small forward, Doug McDermott.
Dougie Buckets, there it is.
Power forward, Keldon Johnson.
Olympian Keldon Johnson.
And center, Jacob.
Jacob.
That is not how you say it.
It does. It does when you're Australian, and chances are he probably also was an Olympian. So that's the strategy. Oh, you know him. You know him well.
He's Australian.
No, he's Austrian.
Oh, my bad.
But anyway, the point is, Popovich must believe in this team more than any of us. He either knows Keldon Johnson's a stud, Lonnie Walker's a stud. Derek, we seem to know where Murray's ceiling is, but one of these guys we haven't heard from much yet must be at least enough for them to be competitive. Remember, we're saying the Pelicans are a 40-win team, the Grizz are a 41-win team. That should be enough to get in the play-in. So if Popovich is sticking around, he must believe this team can flirt with 38, 39 wins to at least be competitive all season. So I have the Spurs in fourth. I have them at 37 wins, and it has nothing to do with their roster. It has nothing to do with anything other than I refuse to believe Popovich would stay with a team that's going to win 28 like Vegas has him at. Why would he be here?
I think he's here because he thinks that he can make this team better than they are.
And I have no reason to doubt that. If he says I can get – and again, I don't think he thinks it's a 60-win team, but when you look at the bottom of the West, especially now that two-thirds of the conference gets to at least play in for the playoffs, you only need about 37, 38 to get there. And he obviously believes that's possible.
First off, did not know that he was on the Spurs.
I told you, Al-Farouq Aminu's there. It's the who's who of guys you would have drafted in 2014. It's unbelievable what they've done with this bench.
All right. I struggled with the Spurs are also my number four team. When I was doing my analysis for this pick, I was trying to think, you know, all right, so the Spurs don't have a lot of players that are very good at this point in time, but do I really think the Spurs are going to fall all the way past the Rockets to the bottom yes. of the division? I didn't think so. I thought that there's got to be something that Greg Popovich knows about this team. He's been there a long time. I believe that he's still a good coach, and I believe that he's good enough to take a team of, well, not much known talent at this point and still hang around in the 30s. Now, let's take a look back at what they did last year. They were 33-39 last year, the 10th seed in the Western Conference. That would have equated to about 38 wins. I did not see them improving from 38 wins, but on the surface, I couldn't see much of a change here for the Spurs. So I kept
them. They lost DeMar DeRozan. Listen,
I believe that the Spurs will find a way to stay competitive and win some games that neither you nor I nor anyone else will expect.
Who do you see on this team stepping
and
up?
Hold on, let me finish. And then for that reason, I believe that they'll find a way to stay at 38 wins this season.
No, not at all. Zero chance to get 38 wins.
I'll tell you, I have him at 37. And to answer your question directly, he clearly believes in Keldon Johnson, and so does the rest of the league. There's a reason he was an Olympian replacement. I mean, that's an elite level of talent. And I'm not saying he's necessarily ready to DeMar DeRozan next year, but surely that means something that they see him with enough potential to start grooming him as an Olympian now. And if you say, well, he didn't do much last year, well, duh, DeMar DeRozan was doing it.
I'm not saying that he doesn't have a chance to be a good player in the future. I'm saying for this season coming, do I see him taking a huge step? I see him, obviously, someone has to put up points, right? Someone has to get stats on a team. Why can't it be him? It can be. I just don't see this team, as it's constructed right now, being above 35 wins. I really don't.
I mean, fair enough. At most, that means we're only talking two or three wins, you know, different. But you look at this team, Devin Vassell, you know, picking the teens, I think last year, maybe 2 years ago, really hasn't developed. Maybe Popovich knows something about him we don't. Lonnie Walker picking the teens a couple years back, who really hasn't gotten a chance to shine much. Maybe Popovich knows something about him. Keldon Johnson, another lottery pick that, you know, same range. The Spurs always draft in about the same range. But the point is, these are a bunch of guys who have been behind DeRozan. A couple of these guys were even behind Aldridge. And they're going to all get a chance to shine. And in the meantime, to your question, who's going to put up the points? That's what Doug McDermott's doing there. He's still been an efficient scorer, even as old as he's getting. If Keldon Johnson can replace DeRozan's athleticism and Dougie Buckets can replace DeRozan's scoring, that's your three.
Let's see. Dougie Buckets, the most points he's ever had in a season is 13.6.
Right. And DeRozan last year was good for what? 22 maybe?
Yeah, I mean, that's a big difference.
Right. So do you think Keldon Johnson can make up 9 points? I'd hope so. If we believe that he can be an Olympian, then, you know, 4 years from now, 8 years from now, which is presumably why he was in the discussion, because you're grooming him, you have to trust that in his second, third year, he can put up 9 points.
21.6. 22, 4, and 7.
So you're losing. So that 7 is irrelevant because you have Murray, you have White, you have guys, and I know you lost Patty Mills too, but again, the assist.
Patty Mills was more also like just good veteranship.
Which again is replaced by Doug McDermott. I think that's probably the easiest wash to argue. Mills' presence in the locker room, he is a gorgeous man. Man, if you haven't looked up Doug McDermott lately, if you just remember him from his Creighton days, my God, look him up. He looks exactly the same and he's still cool. Sorry, I know it's irrelevant to the conversation, I-80, but good looking dude. But yeah, I think Doug McDermott can provide the leadership. I think Keldon Johnson can provide that sort of freak athleticism that DeRozan's always had. Murray and White, I mean, remember, Derek White was injured for a ton of last year also. So those assists were assists that Derek White would have normally been getting anyway. So that's slightly skewed. Keldon Johnson, you've never heard of the dude. He had 12.8 points last year.
Yeah, 13-6, which is a good number.
And that was playing behind DeRozan. Now give him some of DeRozan's shots.
Well, no, that was at 28 minutes ago.
Right, but playing second fiddle shooting, to DeRozan. But
only shooting 48% from the field, 33 from three, which is pretty deep, which is, you know, solid for a power forward, you know. But, you know, I hate how Yahoo doesn't give you fouls per game anymore as a stat than he used to. I probably shouldn't be using Yahoo as a reference anymore.
Nor should you be using fouls per game as a reference.
Well, no, per game is important. If he's in 28 minutes, if he was averaging like 2.5 fouls a game, that's a lot.
In 2.5 fouls in 28 minutes?
Yeah.
What? Mitchell Robinson fouls out in 14 minutes. Two and a half minutes in 28 minutes you're worried about? That would mean he would need 84 minutes to foul out of a game. The game would have to go into 8 overtimes for him to foul out.
That was not what I meant. I just meant in general, like, that's why. Obviously, the numbers were not correct. I didn't do the real math in my head. I just did a number. But still.
I do expect him.
Based off of him and what they see, yes, he has potential to be very good. I'm not saying that. And what I'm saying is this team as a whole, I don't see them. I mean, luckily, most of the players are players that bring back the starting five are not necessarily the people who started last year, but they are mostly, excluding Doug McDermott, players from the team. I find it hard to get them those wins, to get them to almost to close to 40 wins like you guys have.
The other thing I will say, because this is going to segue nicely into Houston here in a minute, I feel like the number of teams who genuinely feel a sense of urgency, who genuinely want to win as many games as humanly possible, is not that many. Houston for sure doesn't care about wins this year. The Thunder don't. A bunch of teams don't particularly care this year. I feel like by virtue of having Greg Popovich, not only because of the culture he fosters, but also because of his limited number of years left, the Spurs will want to win every game. And I feel like that'll lead to things like winning all 5 games against the Rockets, surprisingly winning a few games against, you know, mid-level teams who, you know, like the Grizzlies might not care if they're the 7 or the 8 necessarily, but the Spurs are going to want to try and win every single game. And I think that also, you have to kind of include mentality when you're playing this obviously absurd every win, every loss game. And I think that does factor in. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I miss DJ Augustine?
No, this is
Houston. This is the Rockets. Okay.
Looking at the Houston Rockets team, and they got some guys from like mid 2010s, like 2015, 2014, who I would love to have had in the playoffs. Why? What? Did you know that Houston has Avery Bradley?
I mean, they pay him. I think that might be a better way to put it. They give him money every 2 weeks. Might be the safer way to say.
They have DJ Augustine. They got Eric Gordon. They got guys. Houston. They have guys.
First of all, I'd be stunned if Eric Gordon is still on this team come March. But second of all,
DJ Augustine, how is he on this team?
I mean, I would still take Doug McDermott over DJ Augustine.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
Plus, Doug McDermott's the most gorgeous man.
Sorry. Don't forget Christian Wood.
Just to get back on track here real quick, Kevin, what was your number on the Spurs, just to resolve that?
All right. My number on the Spurs was 38 wins, which was the same amount that they would have won last year had they been an 82-game schedule. I didn't have them improving not disproving, but falling off from 38 wins.
All right, I'm at 37, so let's just see, Kilroy, how low do you have?
I have it at 25.
25?
Wow. That's a huge jump, but okay.
I'm just saying, it's...
Wow, Mongo has his hat off with that drop.
That hurts. Oh, that's...
Right, but what you have to realize is this is a range. It's between 25 to 30 is really, what I see them getting. I see the Rockets getting there. I see the Rockets getting 30.
All right. We gotta set this right now. All right. So we're gonna.
Told you all the awesome players from a couple decades ago that were on the Houston Rockets. All those
guys who won NBA Jam '94, ready to make one last run as a Houston Rockets core. All right, Kevin, take it away, math man. Show them why he's wrong.
The Houston Rockets last year went 17-55. You project that over 82 games, you're only getting 19 wins. Now, due to the cover story...
They're much worse than I thought they were.
Due to the cover story that we found out yesterday, that John Wall and the Rockets have agreed to sit John Wall while
I didn't mention him. I mentioned DJ Augustine, Avery Bradley, Eric Gordon.
Mike, let me finish. Hold on. So, due to the fact that they have agreed to sit John Wall, I don't see them... I don't really see them improving from that. And while I don't believe John Wall is like a top of the line great player, I do believe that he would be responsible for at least one or two wins accidentally at some point. So I have the Houston Rockets winning a grand total of 17 games this year.
That's pretty low.
Getting ugly in here.
That is disrespectful to the Houston Rockets. Wow. How dare you insult DJ Augustine like that? What did DJ Augustine, Avery Bradley, and Eric Gordon never do to you?
Now, I'll tell you, I'm going to...
All three of those guys probably won't be on the roster and probably won't get many minutes.
I'm going to jump in and play peacemaker for a second here, a.k.a. tell you why you're both wrong. Kevin, I agree
with you. Fine, you know what? We'll flip the Spurs and the Rockets.
No, you stick to your guns, but I'll tell you. I agree with you in principle that you can argue they're running back a lot of the team because all those guys you mentioned, the only guy who joined the team is Augustine. They had Gordon. They had Bradley. So it's not like those guys are going to significantly improve on the 17. They also added
to my defense.
They also added Theus along the way.
I didn't the team. I don't know why they still. Why do they have like four 30-year-old point guards?
The whole team is just shooting guards who can chuck from anywhere. But the one thing I'll say, Kevin, is I do think you have to respect Jalen Green a little bit. The addition of Jalen Green
and the development of Kevin Porter Jr.
count for something. Now the only problem is this team is basically the Magic 2 inches taller. It's Kevin Porter Jr. It's Jayshon Tate. It's Jalen Green. It's even Kevin Martin Jr., despite being taller, plays a similar style game. It's just it's the same guy over and over. And I know they brought in Christian Wood to try and add a little bit of diversity to the team, but they really need to figure out, they're probably a few years away where they need to stink again and draft a center or draft a true point guard and let Jalen Green move to the two, or figure out Jalen Green's home on the team is really important. And
I'm not going to lie. I mailed this in.
I think they're a little away from being a team. It's just a bunch of young shooting guards. I think the other thing that factors into your point, Kevin, is it comes down to mentality. Why on earth would the Rockets want to win games this year other than for culture? Mathematically, it doesn't terribly make sense for them to be good this year, especially while they're trying to figure out the John Wall situation. The other thing it comes down to is ultimately, what do they get for John Wall? If they get players, I'm willing to go higher on my number. If they get draft picks and they're just running out the who's who of young guys every year, you're going to go lower. So Kevin, in your number, I don't think that if they trade John Wall for just picks, I don't think that's a terribly wrong number. I have them a little bit higher. I have them at 24, but I still think it's a no
Which
contest.
Is really
around, the lowest one.
24 is around what I originally had them at before I decided to change it last week. I had them at 20 last week.
Fair enough.
I had the Spurs actually getting like around 40 wins,
and then you and saw their roster,
and then I decided, you know what? And then, well, then you guys were like, "Are you sure they're going to be like?" And then I'm like, and then you guys spooked me to dropping.
Spooked or did our job? I think there's a fine line.
There.
Halloween is around the corner, so it's not too far away.
That's true. I had them at 45 wins last week. You guys, Mongo scared me and made me rethink. And I'm like, maybe they're not that good.
I mean, they're not that good, but they're also not that bad. You gotta find. Gotta find that happy medium.
Fine, I have them at 40. I'll change and say that I will say this: they'll probably be a 30, and I expect Houston. I'll keep them at where I had them last week, 25.
I will say this: Vegas has the Spurs and the Rockets one game apart. That more than anything seems exceptionally incorrect to me. That's the part that got me thinking and doing a deeper dive here. If they had the Spurs three or four games ahead, but both really low, I probably would have accepted that just as canon, but they have the Rockets around 27.5, depending on what book you're looking at. They have the Spurs at 28.5, which to me seems incredibly low. But even if you have them, you know, there, if you have the Spurs at 28, you probably have the Rockets about where Kevin has them. To me, they're not terribly close when you just look at how the two organizations have been run the last.
So it's so weird because the Houston Rockets only 2 years ago were really the powerhouse of the
league. Yeah.
And
they went 0-27 in the fourth quarter against Golden State. When if they make any three pointers, they might have stolen that game and won the series.
Right. I mean, but that's not even just that. But like the players they lost or traded and got away, who did they bring in? Like, I feel like they didn't get good value for the players that they lost. Chris Paul. They lost.
James Harden.
They lost. Russell Westbrook. They've lost the center, Clint Capella, you know, like, and at one point, like, how do you lose these all-stars and who do you have to show for it?
Well, here's the thing about James Harden. The thing about James Harden was it was a situation where everyone knew that he wanted out. So they were really going to be hard pressed to get great value back for James Harden. So you could argue that they didn't get great value for James Harden, but If in the general situation where everyone knows that you're not going to have him, they're going to like lower their offer significantly because they know you got to get rid of him to avoid him being a cancer on your team. And just as a major point, I do agree with Mongo's point that if John Wall is traded and they bring back significant players, like my 17 win prediction is totally wrong. I just wanted to let you know that when I was doing this, I was just doing this strictly on John Wall not playing. I didn't have any information on what kind of, like, and I didn't even hear any rumblings yet of what John Wall would be traded for. So I was just doing this straight on John Wall's not playing. I got to make a guess up just based on that, you know?
Right. Which, in fairness, for those who didn't watch the first episode, which first of all, shame on you, go back and watch. It was awesome. But for those of you who are just tuning in, those were the rules we set. Even if you're positive a trade is coming, anything that is speculative, you do not count. So the announcement has been made. John Wall will not be an active Rocket. So we do have to figure that in. Where he's going to go, what he's going to be worth, is he going to be traded or bought out, what's going to happen? We're not including that. So if anyone's watching this and saying, well, you have to count that for something. And same thing to Kilroy's question, same idea. What did they get for those guys? They still have a ton of picks coming on the James Harden trade. But at this very moment in life, when we're discussing where are the Rockets for 21-22, you're absolutely right. What they've physically turned James Harden and everyone else into so far,
I mean, it's like
is very little.
It's the same thing with the Thunder, right?
But exactly.
That's the thing. Like that's the reality of the NBA nowadays, right? We're not talking about like where you get value, right? Like it's, oh, hopefully we get a good pick and this pick pans out into something. And that's why there's such disparity in teams.
Because what's happening now is with the idea of super teams, when you trade a major player, you're basically trading it to a team that's a lock to be drafting outside of the top 25 nowadays. It's very rare that you trade a player to a team that's desperately just trying to get into the playoffs. And so when they trade you your first round pick, it ends up being like somewhere between the 12 and the 15 or the 12 and the 18. All of these picks that the Rockets are getting from the Nets, they were as depleted as they could be down the stretch.
Like 27
and it still ended up being outside the top 25. So it's incredibly hard to trade for assets and not immediately know you got some sort of pennies to the dollar on them. Because you're only making trades with teams that know that that pick is not going to be terribly meaningful. Now, the Rockets tried to beat that system by really trading into the future on some of these and just hoping that the Nets get older faster than anyone counts on. It's a noble approach to trying to change the game a little bit. But in the meantime, it does mean that they're going to not fully be reloading for quite a while here.
I just don't see that now that I'm really actually looking at these rosters.
The Mavericks are going to clinch this division by Christmas.
I'm not so sure, man.
Don't be so sure.
The Spurs, I really am more convinced as like a 35-40 win team. Boy, howdy.
Olympian
this,
Keldon
yeah.
Johnson.
this Rocket team, the more and more I look at it, the more and more I'm like, they drafted this.
They have the large rookie center we love.
He's only 6'10".
So you got that going for it.
The Turkish center.
Turkish Wonder.
Wonder, sorry. Who's a center? God, this team is just – I'm looking at the players that they drafted. I'm looking at the
– All right. You keep looking, but shall we call it? Shall we call it a day here? All right. Thank you very much for watching. We will be finishing up the West by heading a little north and talking about how confused we are by the Tills next week.
Remember to like, share, and subscribe. Check us out on all the major platforms for podcast. And see you next time.
Love you, Kevin.
Also, don't forget, comment.